Progressive presents Adjusting to the Suburbs. You just bought a home in the suburbs, but no one told you about all the birds, specifically this one, who seems to be calling out Roy. Roy. But who exactly is Roy? And why doesn't he ever respond? Maybe Roy is just bird speak for save with Progressive by bundling your home and auto. I guess until Roy answers, we'll never know. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. Coverage provided in service by affiliates and third-party insurers.
Study and save this summer with Waubonsie Community College. Earn the same credit as a four-year school at a fraction of the cost. Choose from a variety of popular transferable courses, such as psychology, communications, art, biology, and economics, with many online and hybrid options. So study and save this summer at Waubonsie. Most classes start June 12. Learn more at waubonsie.edu/summer. That's waubonsie.edu/summer.
Watch out, little bitch. Watch out, little bitch. Watch out, little bitch. Watch out, little bitch. You getting mad. I'm getting rich. You getting mad. I'm getting rich. Watch out, little bitch. Watch out, little bitch. Watch out, little bitch.
Good day, everyone. Welcome back to the ATL Podcast. I am your host, Mappy Davis, and this is the program where we interview the famous, Atlanta famous, infamous, or just about anybody else that I feel like talking to. And today's episode is with David K.A. of Motion Family. And the reason I played Watch Out by 2 Chainz is because that is one of the many, many videos David and Motion Family directed. I know you remember that one with his head on a bunch of people's bodies. Quite humorous video. Great song. I'm sure you remember it. And they've literally done, I think he said, over 150. They've worked with pretty much everybody. So go check out their website if you really don't know. But pretty much every rapper ever, every hip-hop star ever, they've shot a video for. Jeezy Me Okay is a famous one. Trinidad James, All Gold Everything. We talk about specifically a couple of these videos that they made and a lot of other fun stuff. So I want to get into today's episode, but first tell you about my friends here at Finca to Filter. The fall is here, which means fall weather is here, which means the fall flavors are here. Come check out Finca to Filter over 2 locations in the West End. Well, one's West End, one's Adair Park. They're very close. I'm over here in Adair Park, Create ATL, recording this right now. They've got the new fall flavors out. Also, you've probably been to their main spot before over in the West End inside the brewery. Finca to Filter, great stuff. Go check them out. Want to shout out my buddy Zach Wolf. That's who I met David Kaye with over at the Atlanta Worldwide Gallery, which we'll talk about a little on the show. Zach had a zine release party over there, and that's where I met David. And then we set it up to have this chat a couple weeks later. So thank you, Zach. And with that, let's get to it. David K and I, a few weeks ago, over in Old Fourth Ward. Oh, away we go. Do you want to describe where we are? Try to paint a little picture for the audience. Do you want to describe where we are?
Yeah, we're at a place called The Cabin. It's over by Lady Bird. It's D Wong, my business partner's kind of private place. It's a personal collection of his. It's books, chairs, furniture, posters, just a great collection of stuff that he's collected and continuously collects over the years. And so he got the space right at the beginning of COVID and has just been building it up. And, you know, he's still kind of working on it, but he started to do some like meditation classes here and other just kind of events. But it's really just a personal space that represents him pretty well.
It doesn't look unlike your place that I just was in, though, the other day.
No, I think a lot of inspiration comes from this. Also, that place is a mixture of all 3 of us. So I have 2 business partners, D Wong and Sebastian. So it really is a mixture of all of our styles. And we all have different styles where Sebastian is extremely organized and clean and fairly minimal. I'm probably disorganized somewhat, but I like to collect a lot of stuff. And D-Wong is a huge just collector, and he likes a lot of things, you know? And so we all kind of are, Seabass is strong on one side, I'm in the middle, and D-Wong's kind of on the extreme side.
Yeah, if I was going to describe this place, I would say, like, in TV or like a in a movie or a prestige TV show, this would be like the spot of like the coolest guy on the show. They would try to make it look like this.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, D-Wong has some of the best taste and just an extensive knowledge in art, history, books, just pop culture, everything, you know. So that's how we kind of initially meshed too, is we have the same love for music and music videos and Southern rap especially, and you know, we share a lot of the same passion. So, you know, I met Sebastian first in college, and that's where we started our company Motion Family, and then I met D-Wong in 2007 or 8 over at Grand Hustle, and we just connected instantly. So
we started out, you were showing me a picture of you and Nylon, aka Speaker Fox, in high school. So you went to what school?
So I grew up here in Atlanta, and I went to Paideia School from kindergarten through 12th grade. Nylon joined in, I want to say, 10th grade maybe at Paideia. And, you know, it's hard to come into a small private school as an outsider when, you know, a lot of people have been going to school together their whole life, and it's hard to fit in. But, you know, she was cool. She was, you know, kind of fit in with our crowd and did the same things. And, you know, she had her own kind of cool crowd and was, you know, bringing some, you know, just taught us a lot about just different things. And so she was fun to hang out with in high school, and we got along great, and then kind of couldn't stay connected throughout college. And then when I came back to Atlanta, probably, you know, probably a couple years later, 2008 or 9, you know, we reconnected again, and, you know, would see her all the time at L Bar and connected outside of that. And she was a big supporter of Motion Family, what we did. And I worked for Young Jeezy for a long time, and that was one of her favorite artists. So I'd bring her like merch from him and stuff like that. So, you know, we stayed connected up until, you know, she started, you know, went the different direction.
Do you remember the first hip hop record or video or moment for you that you were like, huh, this speaks to me?
Yeah, I mean, I have an older brother. He's 5 years older than me. So when he went to Paideia as well, and he'd carpool me to school, and I was hearing Outkast, Southern Playlist, of Cadillac Music all the time. I was hearing Snoop Dogg, Doggy Style, Warren G's first album, Dr. Dre. So I got when I was in like seventh grade, that was kind of my first introduction into sixth, seventh grade. That was kind of my first introduction into it. I didn't really know who it was or what it was until maybe like a year or two later. But I loved it, and it was kind of like how I got into just music in general. And then I continuously, you know, I was in high school, my best friend Steve, he was the type of person, every Tuesday he'd line up and get every new album that dropped. And then he'd have a CD burner, you know, so always was listening to new music through him. He was a great, you know, always was telling me, putting me on to new stuff. And, you know, I just loved rap music. I love Southern rap music. I made mixtapes, and, you know, I just was really into the culture. And, you know, growing up in Atlanta, we just had such great rap music coming out of here, you know? So it was a great place to be at the time, for sure.
And so you went down to SCAD, right?
Yeah, so I, you know, I was in high school. I was also into graffiti, so, you know, a fan of Dax and Sever and this guy Ease, IHS, and this guy Crisis was big here, and Stack. And, you know, I used to go under the bridges and hang out all the time. So that was like a huge influence. And in high school, I didn't know what I wanted to do. My dad kind of was like, hey, I'll support, you know, I'll put you through college if you you need to make a decision, though. Do you want to do a legal art or do you want to go to college? You know, so they go, I want to go to college, you know. So I applied to like three schools, Georgia State, Auburn for some reason, I think because one of my friends was going there, and then my other friend was going to SCAD, and I went on their site, and I didn't have to submit anything, no essay, no portfolio, and I just applied and got in. And I went to for graphic design, and I went down there to look at it, and the teacher's like, who's your favorite graphic designer? And I was like, I don't know. He's like, I was like, I have no idea. He's like, well, you better start learning, because you need to know that stuff. So it's kind of like a wake up moment. And yeah, I ended up going to SCAD down in Savannah. Atlanta wasn't open yet, and that was a great experience, you know.
But did you start to think like, I want to shoot stuff, I want to direct stuff? Like, how did that kind of path for you go?
So I did graphic design at SCAD, and Sebastian, who was my best friend and roommate for 2 years there, he was a video major. And so I was going through graphic design, it was cool. I was kind of into web design and Flash, stuff like that. You know, and my free projects, I'd try to do like some album covers or stuff like that. But Sebastian was doing like videos, and he's like, you know, and one, it was like, let's do music videos, you know. I was like, oh shit, that's way better than what I'm doing. And I was already, you know, neck deep in graphic design, and I couldn't really just go full into video, but I didn't necessarily think I needed to go full into video. You know, I was really into music videos at that time. I was downloading off of like Kazaa and LimeWire music videos, you know, and so I had a whole hard drive of music videos that I collect, and we'd watch just throughout the day as we're chilling and doing whatever in college. And this was before YouTube, believe it or not. You know, this is, you know, I was like thinking about making music video DVDs and stuff like that. So I was really into that. And then so when he's like, I want to do music videos, and Sebastian shares, you know, the same love for music too. And I was like, dude, that's fun. So I got on those projects with him and helped him out. And I picked up a minor in broadcast design, which taught me video editing and some motion graphics stuff. And, you know, just kind of had Seabass show me the ropes for editing. And from there, just helped out on his projects and knew like we wanted to do music videos. And that's how we kind of created Motion Family, was us. And like, you know, you're surrounded by so many amazingly talented people. And it's like, hey, like, why do we need to go work for somebody? We can do this ourselves. And it's a great mindset, and it didn't necessarily work out that way, but it led to where we are. And the you know, I think having that mindset allowed us to just go and do it and believe in ourselves and just like, you know, get to help get us to where we are now.
But when you say it didn't work out, what did you, like early on, what do you mean?
Well, you know, at the time, SCAD didn't have any business classes. They don't teach you how to be an entrepreneur. You know, they're kind of just teaching you how to work for other people. So I graduated college. I went here to Atlanta. Sebastian went to Tampa. You know, you want to do music videos. And I think in that time he was in Tampa and I was in Atlanta. We did like two music videos for just independent like friends of his there, just trying to build our portfolio. And this was before DSLR cameras. So this is like Rick Cordero, you know, dope early music video director. He was using like the HVX, and they had this like, I think it's called like Black Rock or something like that. It was like these like attachments where you could put on the VHS or the VHX to make it look like 35mm. And so, you know, we were saving up to get this, like, you know, it's like $10,000 minimum just to get a camera to get in the game. So, you know, saving up to get that. We're not at SCAD anymore, so we can't use the cameras for free and stuff like that. So it was just a lot harder to get in the game then. You know, you couldn't just be like, hey, I'm going to go get a $1,000 DSLR and start shooting music videos. You know, it was like that just didn't exist. So it just took a little while. I worked for myself still. You know, I really have had a mentality where I don't want to work, have another, like have a boss. So I did freelance work for myself doing web design and stuff for 2 years. And then spent 8 months in an agency doing web design. And then after that, my brother started a coffee company here, and I went and worked for him, you know, as a part owner in that too. So just did that, and that gave me some time to also focus on Motion Family. And then I met D Wong. I was doing a magazine on the side for Grand Hustle. They had a magazine called Dapper. We did two issues, I think. And D Wong came in. He had just come off his run with Juice magazine and was looking, you know, to design. And we met with like 10 different designers. D-Wong showed his work and it was like amazing. And I like, just connected with him. He's like, I work at Inman Perk all the time. And I was like, I live across the street from there. So, you know, he started just coming over there to work. And he was a photographer too and a designer.
And what year is this?
2007, 8. And he was a designer. He's like, oh, I want to get into video too. And I was like, well, let's go. And we did convince Seabass to move up here. And, you know, at the time, it was a lot of grinding where we're going to network, you know, events, album release parties, and any place where we could show our work, you know, these like two or three music videos we'd done, like one kind of cool one we did in college and two other ones outside of that. And showing them to anyone and everybody. We'd go to like the record labels would have these listening parties and we were invited, you know, D-Wong had to connect. So we go up there and show everybody. And eventually we showed a intern who worked the front desk our video. He's like, oh, this is dope. I'm gonna show my boss. And he showed his boss Yancey and he met with us and was like, hey, I got this video with Gucci Man, Young Ralph and Young Jock featuring Gucci Man and Young Ralph. I'm like, hell yeah. You know, so kind of, you know, we shot that on the red. This was like 2000.
Did you have the name yet?
Yeah, we have Motion Family. We didn't have any work behind us. So we shot this on a red, like the
but
first.
Whose idea was that?
Motion Family. So we're in college. My boy Zach, who just unbelievable visual effects artist, we're sitting around trying to think up names. And he's like, oh, I thought of this name a long time ago, Motion Family. Y'all can use that. And I was like, hell yeah. For real? He's like, yeah. I was like, dope, we're using it. So we ran with that. He designed our first logo. He had done some stuff for LRG back in the day. So we'd base it off of Goody Mob's album at the time when they had that tree on the front of it. And, you know, he stole an LRG tree and, you know, put Motion Family on it. And that's kind of, you know, came up to Atlanta, made an LLC. And that was kind of it. That was in 2005, right when we kind of graduated. So that's how Motion Family came about. Shout out to Zach.
Do you remember, like, in your early days, the videos that you'd seen at that time or before that you were like, if I could make something like that, that would be awesome?
Yeah, I mean, my favorite director at the time was Gil Green, and he was doing these really dope videos, which they weren't one-shot videos, but they were really, they appeared to be, and they were these really, like, cool Steadicam videos. He did, like, the Little John and one where it was, like, up in the club, and it was a really dope video, and 3-6 Mafia videos, Dead Prez videos. So he was kind of, like, one of my biggest inspirations for videos. And then another video I really liked was the Memphis Bleek and Jay-Z video Around Here. Time I just thought that was like really epic. So that was one of the videos that was on just like repeat all the time. But then as we got closer towards like 2008-09, I'd say like Rick Cordero was a big inspiration for us, and he was shooting, you know, on the HVX, and that was kind of like, okay, we want to get to that level, you know, like independently. So
right, so you know, Zach Wolf and I are friends, and you know, he's been helping, you know, point me in the right direction about interviewing a lot of guys and pointing me to you and saying how it's really, it's hard to explain to people. Are they building next door?
I think we'll be all right. Happened, yeah.
I think we'll be all right. I mean, we could maybe move downstairs, but
yeah, we could move down there. It seems like something just started. I think Lady Bird is doing something.
Lady Bird's across from us though, that way, right? We are now physically walking.
They're on the backside.
Downstairs of this dope ass. I'll have to do at least a couple of Instagram videos. But like I said, this looks like if you're making a movie like, oh, look how cool this guy is. He's got cool stuff. Like the props department went fucking bananas.
Yeah, you should do D-Wong next. He'd be a great person.
Well, that's one of the questions I ask. You can definitely.
We got still sound everywhere we go.
Yeah, but I think that's just kind of muffled talking is better than banging. And these mics are pretty directional, so okay, I think they're pretty good. But you know, he talked to me about how, you know, you guys were just, you know, just hustling back then, and you know, basically like weren't handed anything, just like just started true hustling. And I think people do have a hard time, especially now, because you can have a YouTube channel tomorrow, right? Or in 5 minutes from now, an IG channel 5 minutes from now. And in those days, like you're waiting for the gatekeeper right? Somebody to release you, somebody to distribute you, whether it's music, video, whatever. So it seems like it's really hard to explain that to folks.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, I think whether now or before, it's still hard to somewhat get in the game. I mean, it takes that sort of just like, you know, what is it, ambition? Just like that drive to do it, you know, where you have to hear all those no's and all it takes is one yes to get there. And I think, and that was it at the time a lot too. I think now it's just so many people out there, you have to figure out how you're going to stand out, you know, and how you're going to get that gatekeeper's attention, because now you're fighting with way more people instead of just like, you know, I don't think there was as many, like, especially here in Atlanta at the time, like we were some of the only directors really trying to do music videos here locally. And Atlanta is such a huge music scene. So, you know, we could have gone to LA or New York, like a traditional path, but it made no sense. Everyone we wanted to work with was pretty much here in Atlanta and in the South, you know? So, yeah, I mean, I think so we just try to tell people that work with us and come up under us, you know, just keep, you know, you just got to go, go, go. And it's not necessarily the person with the best work. It's the person that's, you know, gets out there the most and just puts themselves out there, you know?
Why do you think people early on wanted to continue to work with Motion Family?
We were cheap. No, I mean, what changed it for us and allowed us to do what we did was the DSLR. And so that was 2008, the end of that. D1 got married, and for a wedding gift, you know, his camera broke, and for a wedding gift, he got the Canon 5D Mark II for photography, and it happened to have video. And we just started testing it out. We had a little 50mm lens, cheap $300 lens, and just he shot a little video for Sean Fallion, and it was dope. I mean, it was like low light, depth of field. It was just something I'd never seen before. And I was like, dude, this is it right here. You know, like we had just gotten this $8,000 to $10,000 setup. And we're like, dude, let's sell this right away. And we sold that, bought two more 5Ds. And, you know, well, some of that comes like, you know, we met at that same time too. The guy Yancey from Atlantic introduced us to Boosie, and D-Wong did photos, and he saw our Jock video and was like, yo, do work for me. And he gave us like a bunch of cash, and we just took that cash. He's like, he just gave it to us first and was like, you guys come to Baton Rouge with me like in a couple of days, here's money. And we went to the camera store and bought all, you know, 5Ds, all the L-series lenses, the mics, and just got everything we needed to do this video thing. And then from there, you know, working with someone like Boosie, who's a legend in the rap game, and then we did a video for Pill, which went viral, Trap Going Ham. And then kind of from there, you get momentum. And, you know, we're not charging a ton of money because we already, you know, equipment was paid for. It was just like, you know, pretty much the way we worked is, you give us this amount of money, y'all cover everything else, as in like, we'll come and shoot it. Y'all, if y'all want a helicopter, you're paying for the helicopter. You bring the helicopter. Y'all want to shoot the club? Cool. Take us to the club to shoot in it and pay, you know? So we just did that, and we get our money. The rappers would set it up, and it worked out great for a long time.
How do you approach these projects? Do they usually come to you and say, here's my basic idea? Or do they come to you and say, I have no idea what I want to do, make something magical for me?
So most music videos, and then you kind of get to, then you get, you know, you get into the system with the labels, and there's the gatekeepers there, the music video commissioners, and you know, once you're in their attention, you're kind of, they send you briefs, right? So we got a video, this amount of money, no creative, y'all come up with the idea, or here's what they want to do, or, you know, it varies sometimes. You know, when we did 2 Chainz Watch Out, he's like, hey, I want to do this big head video like Ludacris back in the day, you know, reference that. So, you know, that's it. It just, and then when we did the one where we put the dog on the head, that was just our idea, you know. So it just varies, you know. So there's no rhyme or reason to it. There's usually just a brief that goes out, and sometimes there's, you know, specific creative asks, and sometimes there aren't.
But you know that you want to tell a story, right? And so there's X amount of videos with cars and jewelry and girls and clubs and streets, right? And you know that you want to do something that's awesome, that's worth watching, that's memorable, that makes the song more memorable. So how do you kind of approach those projects?
It's hard. I mean, I think at first, you know, we're just doing what we like, which might be just girls, cars, neighborhoods. But I think the approach to how we shot it was just a little different because we were able to have this kind of authentic documentary style because it was just us and these little small cameras. We weren't really using much lighting at the time. And it just, people, it's a different setup. Like we can really go into real environments and shoot it, whereas like now we don't really do that, where it's like everything is a lot more set up. You know, it's a lot harder to bring these bigger cameras in and then you're kind of trying to set up these natural environments where before we were going into these natural environments and kind of documenting them. And I think that that's what kind of set our work apart at the time, was like it just was like a little bit more authentic and real, and you know, it looked cool. You know, like no one had the same way I looked at the DSLR as how everyone else saw it too, was like, this looks, you know, you just haven't seen natural light or even past natural light in film, you know, where a DSLR sees light that we don't even see, you know? And so, and the way we shot with them was not in a traditional way, you know, we just did it our own way. So we weren't sticking to like a certain ISO or anything. We were just like doing whatever we want and, you know, not pushing it until it was like completely grainy, but like, you know, just D-Wong's got a great sense of light and just kind of, you know, we've learned through that and just lighting and using natural light, and I think that helped just separate us from what was happening at the time.
And so what of the three of you, what do you bring the best of?
So for the long time, you know, when it came, just different elements, I mean, I've kind of like handled, been in charge of just doing a lot of the business side of stuff where it's, you know, just that into things, which leads to then being like more of a producer and executive producer, help putting it together, projects. And then on shooting, just, you know, I think we all collaborate on different treatments and ideas. And then when we were first shooting, you know, I was doing a lot of the camera work and D-Wong was doing a lot of the light, you know, making sure the lighting was, you know, the camera, the picture looked right. And I do a lot of the camera work and we'd have three cameras and just shoot a lot. And then Sebastian and I edit as well. So then, you know, we go sit down and I'd do the first cut, and then I don't like feedback, so I'd give it to Seabass and he'll do the feedback.
I don't like feedback.
Yeah, I don't really. You know, I mean, it's just I don't dealing with clients and their feedback isn't not my favorite.
Oh, client
thing.
Feedback, right? I thought you meant like in general.
No, like dealing with client feedback on projects like that, I just am not as receptive as I probably should be. So Sebastian's great at that.
See,
and so,
it's interesting you say that though, because Zach was telling me. Zach's like, you're cool and calm regardless of the situation. Zach's like, I can't be up at 5 a.m. at some crazy video shoot. I can't deal with any of the nonsense. I don't want to be a babysitter. And he's like, you are always cool heads no matter what's going on.
I mean, we definitely get put in situations where test our, you know, ability to be cool. And I think we know, you know, there's three of us and we're all different. We're all better at handling different situations. So, you know, with that calm and cool, I'm also easy to just be like, all right, fuck it, I'm not dealing with this person no more, and we're gonna walk, you know, we're done. Where Sebastian and D-Wong are a lot more like, okay, we're gonna find a solution, you know, sometimes. So, you know, I think for the most part it is that, but at the same time too, like, I don't also want to put up with some, you know, I don't see like feedback as bullshit, but I also don't want to just put up with shit too, you know. There's a level of that where it's like, or disrespect, you know, we've definitely been with artists that, you know, insult us and stuff like, you know, not everything goes right. So it's like, but yeah, for the most part, I think that's pretty right. I mean, I just know that I'm, you know, I'm passionate about what I do. I like my art, right? So what I do in editing or whatever it is art as well, you know? So then when someone comes and wants to change it, you know, I feel attached to this project in a way where it's like, you know. And so Sebastian's, it's way easy for him. He's not attached to certain, if I lay down shots, he's not attached to these certain shots that I might be, and he can come in and do what's probably better for the project, you know. So they say it's also sometimes good not to direct and edit, because as when you're shooting and stuff like that, you kind of get, you might personally get attached to a shot and it might not be the best shot for the scene, you know?
Right. When you have a good partner, a good editor, and that's why good directors, film and TV, you're like, this is my guy. Right. He knows my sensibility, and we might go back and forth on some things, but like, he gets what I'm about, but it's not me doing both.
But I like editing. Editing is like music videos only. I love, you know, it's something I've loved to do, and you know, not just, I've had a hand in pretty much all the videos we've done, you know, so it's something I do like to do, and I just recognize that, you know, I'll do my thing and then let Sebastian come in and do, finish it off.
So when you say feedback, is it usually the artist or the label that comes in and says something that you're not happy with?
It's a mix of the artist, the label, the management, whoever. And don't get me wrong, a lot of it's usually for the better. I mean, it's all, like, I understand it, you know. I think it's even better sometimes just to get the second eyes on it too,
right?
You know, because like I was saying, I'll get attached to a shot when I probably shouldn't be, you know. So it's good for the whole process because it makes the end result better at the end of the day. And that's why I recognize that and kind of do my thing and then step aside and let the powers,
you know,
that
I was just thinking, I don't even know how it works now, because once upon a time it was you either got airplay on MTV, right? Or VH1, or maybe like Metal had their show, UMTV Raps had their show, right? Like there was only, like, it had to go someplace. And now, like, like your video, like, it can go on like their channel. Like, so how do these labels even decide, like, okay, we're going to push this single so on Spotify, so let's make a cool video to go with it?
I think there is a sort of you know, the labels put together the budgets and they have the singles, whether it's, you know, I think they do more videos per project than they did before, and a lot of them are also just lower budget, like Run and Gun. You know, I think they'll pick the three main songs and put budgets towards them and then solicit the directors. And then most artists now have their own videographers, and they'll do the kind of leftovers for cheap. And, you know, it was at the, you know, we don't do much music stuff at all anymore. So at the time, I think I really loved it. You know, it was great doing a small independent project and then getting to see it on MTV Jams or BET or just seeing it on TV in general and seeing your name pop up, you know. And yeah, I don't watch TV really anymore. I loved, you know, music videos was kind of my thing, and that's not something that's, I don't even think I could find on TV much if I wanted to. So
I think there's specific channels, like on like the Roku channel, that's like, oh, here's 80s loop,
right? So yeah, I mean, I you know, I think it's now it's about views on YouTube, you know, trying to get, you know, I think that's your kind of, there's, you know, there's different levels. If you're working with an independent artist and you put a project out and that project contributes to them getting, you know, a deal, that's cool, you know. Or, you know, if a project goes viral, you know, that's great. And if, you know, boom, if it gets like, you know, I think What a Goal Be, we're close to having a video with 1 billion streams on YouTube, you know, that'd be a next great milestone. So, you know, I think the milestones and goals change with technology, but we're less into music videos now. I mean, we've done over 150, and, you know, creatively it's hard to do the same, you know, people want a lot of the same thing, and it's hard to, like, you know, how many different ways can you incorporate girls, cars, clubs, you know? And like the substance isn't necessarily for the most part that deep right now. So it's just, you know, it's hard to get really creative, you know, and especially if you're talking about violence. I mean, that's the goal. How do you show something cool without, you know, showing all this killing or guns or whatever it is now? You know, we've done plenty of that. I think now it's just like, how do we do something that's like creative or cool? Or, you know, we've gotten some briefs from really big artists lately, and it's like we just haven't really been motivated by, you know, and the budgets have been great, and, you know, for the money purposes, yeah, we should do it, but I think creatively we just, like, the music hasn't really been motivating us to do it.
It's interesting you say that. So I watched, I forced you, and I've never do this, by the way. I don't know why I did it with you, but just, I kind of almost never ask someone like a question in advance. I just like to fire it up and roll, as you can tell we're doing, right?
Right.
But I just said, hey, what are some of the ones that you are proud of or whatever? And you said, because you're a humble cat, you said, well, I like the work to speak for themselves, but these are the ones that I liked. And I looked at the comments, and the comments, even though some of these videos are 10 years old, most of the comments were recent and were like, this song still kills. This song would be a huge hit today. That was kind of the theme from all these videos that I looked at in the recent weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, one, we've been lucky to work with amazing artists and people we've looked up to or been a part of, like, their careers, you know, where we've had a long relationship with them. And I think, I mean, that's my favorite thing too, is like, if you look at the feedback from a video and people feel some sort of emotion out of it, you know. So, you know, we've done some projects with Boosie, like the documentary, or we did this one, I'm Sorry, where he apologizes to Kid in it. You know, if you look at the comments, people really feel that emotion. And I think that that's the goal, right? If people are feeling some sort of way about the video, like, I think that means we've done what we needed to do, you know. If that's, you know, trying to get, and that's all, like, music, you know. I like it to make me feel some sort of way, where it's either good or bad or gives me energy or something. But I have trouble getting into music that just is, that doesn't make me feel some sort of emotion, whether it's just.
So that Boosie doc I did watch, and I'm very impatient. So I was like, can you please send me the whole thing? Because right. I don't want to find, like, just if you search by name,
it's hard.
Sometimes you get part two comes up. Anyway, so here's what I liked about it is I'm immediately thrown into this guy's world, right? There may have been a couple of title credits. I don't remember, but I just know that I'm in this world. I don't know who he is. Like, I'm not that steeped, right? So I don't even know who this guy is, right? Even if I heard his songs, I didn't know that I had, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm in this guy's world. And to be honest, I can't even understand what he's saying part of the time, but that's fine. Like, I'm just in it. Right. I'm just in this fucking guy's world. And now you've made me like him. And now you've made me feel something. And when, like, he comes home from jail and his daughter jumps in his arms, like, I felt something.
Right.
So I'm like, that's, to me, like, I could watch something like that. I don't have to know the artist to be moved.
And it's like, that was that, and, you know, like, we have a great relationship with that artist, Boosie, and we've been working with him since, like, 08, and he just is one of those people, fairly, you know, very genuine. And, you know, like I said, he gave us money off the bat, said, you know, we got our equipment, took us down, had us staying at his house the first couple times, you know, and, you know, eventually we had to be like, we need a hotel, this is crazy, you know, we can't be staying at your house, you know, it's wild there. So, you know, and he'd wake us up at like 7 a.m. ready to shoot, you know. He'd stay up all night at 7, 8 a.m., like, breakfast is ready. He's like, let's go, you know. Like, oh, my God, this man's crazy. But, you know, he let us into his life, his world, and we documented it. And, you know, we didn't think he'd end up going to jail for more than a year or two, and he ended up spending 5 years and got a bunch more charges and the murder charge. And, you know, he'd call me when he was in jail, and we'd do stuff for his family or his artist or his mom. And, you know, I'd help him out. I'd put him in touch with other artists, you know, and, you know, I was, he'd write us in jail. So, you know, I think for some, you know, he trusted us and he still trusts us to do stuff, you know? So I think when you're in that place, you know, there's not a lot of people that you maybe feel like you can trust. And luckily we were one of those people. And so, you know, he got out and we documented that, and we have all this great footage. And then the label's like, hey, we need this documentary in 3 weeks. And I go, shit. So, you know, I think I love the project. It's one of my favorite projects. I would have loved to spend, like, real time on the edit process, you know. But it's cool. I mean, we had no experience really doing anything like that. We worked with a great editor to do that. And, you know, he took what we had and made, like, a cool-ass project in a short amount of time, you know.
It doesn't necessarily matter for the story, but just personally, I didn't quite understand how he went from 20 years to 5, because, like, usually you serve at least half. Like, I don't know, like, what happened? What happened?
So he was supposed to do 2 years. He violated, so the day before, or the night before he went to serve his sentence, he had an ankle monitor on. He went and did a show.
That I saw,
he
right.
He violated, so the judge gave him 4 years, or 4 years, and he could get out with 2 instead of 2 years and get out of 1, you know?
Right.
And then when he was in jail, he was getting charges for bringing drugs in, you know, so it was just, you know, it was building up. And then he got a murder charge. And so then he had to go through that. He went through a whole trial, and he got found not guilty. And then, you know, served another couple months and was able to get out. So he did 5 years total, but he was only supposed to do 1 or 2.
Okay.
And that was it. There was no, like, 20 years. It would have been, like, he would have gotten a life sentence or the death penalty if he got convicted of the murder.
Right. So when he went to jail, you were like, okay, I guess we'll go back home, and then just we'll see what happens with this. And then one day you get the call, or you kept up with the case as it went on.
Yeah, we kept up with everything. I mean, you know, we were with him and his family, like the whole, you know, whole week before he went in. I mean, we you know, his kids, is they, you know, his mom. I mean, we knew everybody. So, you know, and he was a great client of ours as well, you know, on top of just like helping us out or letting, you know, shooting cool stuff with him. He was like just a good client of ours. And so, you know, we definitely kept up with him and, you know, helped with the Free Boosie movement whenever we could and, you know, tried to stay as connected as we possibly could with while he's in jail. And yeah, definitely, you know, through the whole trial and all that, yeah, definitely kept up with all that. I mean, I knew all those people that were being tried. I'd been around them. It was all like things were making sense to me. You know, I was like, oh shit. You know, I didn't realize it, how crazy of a situation we were really in at the time. You know, we were in a middle of a war, you know, and we really had no idea. So
between who?
Just Baton Rouge, you know, the streets down there, you know, people were getting killed and, you know, the people who first took us out in Baton Rouge, they both got killed, you know. Boosie's like, hey, you know, these guys are going to show you around. And, you know, those guys later got killed. And it's like, you know, in hindsight, we're like, now I, you know, there was definitely like some shit going on. And we were just kind of clueless at the time. You know, we didn't know the local politics or anything. We were just kind of going along with the flow.
Right. So, you know, I love connecting with Newface because, you know, he's this great historian, right? Mm-hmm. And I've always been a fan of rap music, right? So I'm older than you. So like I'm old enough to like that kind of first wave, as it were, right? So that early mid 80s LL Cool J, Run DMC, that wave. So Houdini was like one of the first tapes I ever had, right? I still like, every time I hear Houdini, it makes my heart warm because it reminds me of being 13 and hearing this thing that was like, this is not, you know, my older sisters had like Led Zeppelin records and Elton John records, and this was nothing like that, right? So I've been a rap fan. I'm telling you all that to tell you this, that I was just at that show in East Point. Did you hear about the show in East Point that happened the other night? Mm-mm. So it was Pastor Troy and Big Boy was there and a couple of other artists. And I was with Newface, so I got to be like sort of the media front row area. And I had this, again, you're going to probably say, yeah, dude, duh. But I'm telling you, I'm watching these people perform for their people, right, in East Point, right? And I'm just, and I don't even know like half the songs, you know what I mean? Right. I mean, I know the hits from Outkast, but that's about it, right? And I'm watching this happen and I'm like, this is possibly the greatest art form in the world. Like the way the artists are singing, the way that the people are receiving it and connecting. And again, like the best way I can explain it is the way that these towns in England fall in love with their team, with FC Chelsea or whatever those teams are, because it's like they just feel like it's their people. And so here's these people watching these artists. And again, as someone who's listened to rap all my life, I saw it in a different way and I felt it in a different way. And I was like, well, there isn't anything like this art form.
Yeah. No, I think, you know, I toured with B.O.B. and Young Jeezy for a while, and I think that was one of my favorite things to do, is going to shows and experiencing it however you want to. And that was like the fun part of it. If I want to go into the crowd, I can. If I want to go into the little stage, you know, the pit, I can. Or if I want to go on stage and experience it from the artist perspective, I can. So I really liked having that freedom. And if I don't have that freedom, I don't really enjoy a show as much, but
right,
you know, having that, but I, you know, it's a cool thing to do and also document along the way, you know, and you know, all, you know, the backstage life is different than this, you know, the crowd life and, you know, just going between those worlds. And I had a lot of fun doing that. And, you know, I definitely see your point, because it's like, it's just a cool thing to experience and be a part of and just see how these fans react and know the words and know, you know, it's like, it's a cool thing to be a part of that and document it as you go.
Yeah. And the other part was so I got to hang out some backstage, and I watched these artists be very generous, not just to me, but to everybody, you know, Pastor Troy, you know, as like, he immediately got down like in the crowd, right? And then afterwards he's like, hey, I'm gonna be out taking pictures by the food truck. And yeah, he's not the most famous person in the world, and you know, many people listening don't know who he is, but to these people, like, they like worship him essentially, and he's like willing to just be real with them. And I was just kind of blown away by all of it.
I think, you know, it's it's good when artists get to that level where they just want to embrace it all. And I think, I don't know, you know, I know Pastor Troy, I don't know his like full like backstory or anything, but you know, it seems like a lot of artists kind of, sometimes they get an ego, right? Or a lot of times they get this ego and then they get ego checked by just, you know, they're not, they don't remain relevant, right? And so then you're like, oh, wow, you know, like you really start to appreciate the fans you do have, and it's like, look out for them. And I don't know if that's the path he went on, but I feel like that's kind of how a lot of artists I've seen go, is like sometimes they take it for granted, and then, you know, coming back into it, they'll be a lot friendlier and more open to doing stuff with fans. I mean, that's not how it always is. There's definitely a lot of artists out there that do appreciate their fans, but, you know, it just takes a different level to just be out there and take pictures with whoever and mingle in the crowd, you know.
Right.
Some artists can't even do that because they're just too big, you know.
No, of course. Of course. They can't. I get that. Right. The ones that you did send me, though, do you know why you sent me? Like I said, hey, could you just name a couple of things you'd like me to see? And do you know why you named those, the ones you did? Do you remember?
No, I don't. I have to go back. But most likely,
get my phone.
They stood out to me. Let's see what I did send you here. Big Crit, Dreaming. That was a fun video.
Whose idea was that?
It's hard to go back and say, but I don't remember exactly who came up with that idea. But, you know, at the time, I had connected Grady, my boy David, and he connected us with a teacher. And this is like before the filming here was like a thing, so you could just move around so easily. There was no like official approval. We went in there, talked to the assistant principal. He's like, all right, you're good, you know. And now it's like a whole, you know, that could never happen now. And so we got, you know, we shot at Grady and we shot at Burn One's old studio there that they used to have in Virginia Highlands. And I don't know, it just felt like I just liked that video, and it wasn't, you know, it just came across how we wanted it to, you know. It felt like we did a good job at kind of telling that story.
Because that was, of the ones you sent me, that one kind of moved me the most,
yeah,
of like that sort of like the arc of the dreamer, essentially.
All Gold Everything. Yeah. That I think that's just one of my, just over time, I can still watch that. I'm like, oh yeah, that still feels good. And then,
yeah, All Gold Everything was one of them.
All Gold Everything, just cause that was kind of like a big turning point in our career where we were just helping out a friend. I mean, I like Trinidad James' music. It wasn't necessarily my favorite song on the track, on the EP, but we're helping out our friend Dirt, low budget video, and you know, just kind of freestyled it out there, and it, you know, just, it really did come together, and I felt good about it before it released. I was like, man, this video is going to do something. And then they had a great release plan on like World Star and a bunch of other sites, and that went viral, and it carried us for a long time. You know, it got us a lot of work after that. I mean, we had like a big jump after Boosie and the initial DSLR thing, and then it kind of faded, and then boom, like All Gold Everything, and that carried us for a really long time. And so that was a big point. And I felt like also that video just helped kind of bring in a different wave of kind of styling and just the gold, and you know, it kind of just was a turning point and for some things. I thought that's why I sent All Gold Everything. Jeezy Me Okay is just like one of the street videos I just really like. Like, no real story, just an Atlanta video. And I always wanted to shoot, like, I lived, you know, in Inman Park for a long time. And when I go to the freeway, there's this rooftop I'd always see. And I was like, man, I want to shoot on that. And so for that video, I was like, this would be perfect. And got a hold of him and got on top of this rooftop. And, you know, it was just a great rooftop flat, no kind of borders, and just street video in Atlanta. It was fun to shoot. So that's just one of my more fun street videos I like to do. And then the documentary, I think that just was, you know, it just represents the Boosie phase we were in for a while, which was a great experience. And then Black Gangsta Booty, that was another one that was, I like that one. That was, you know, I kind of had this idea. We were working on a Trouble movie. It was like a 7-day shoot. I was helping produce that, the Edgewood movie. And we're in the strip club and we get a call for Booty. And like, I'm in the strip club. I'm looking around, you know, just trying to think about what we could do. And I was like, man, we should do like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, but at the strip club. And just kind of ran with that idea and figured out how to make it work. I mean, it didn't really get the attention I thought I would, but it was still kind of a fun video, and I feel like we're some of the first people to just kind of shrink a rapper down and do that kind of thing. So
this interview almost took place at Magic City, by the way.
You know, it'd have been a little too loud over there.
No. So I go now. I do it early. So I got connected with those guys a few weeks ago, and like I said, hey, what if I like interviewed like Atlanta legends in this Atlanta spot? And they were like, yeah, when we have it available. So this week not available, but it almost happened.
That would have been great. definitely spent my fair share of time in there, and you know, all the clubs all over the country. But it's you really appreciate what Atlanta has, and you know, the places like Magic City and you know, the other strip clubs we have, or even the clubs. I mean, there's really just a special thing here in Atlanta that's just different than everywhere else. You know, other places have great clubs and too, but I think just the Atlanta culture and the environment and whatever it is just, you know, different. I think
when you're out in a club and they play songs that you've made video for, so you like kind of smile like, oh cool, like we worked on that one.
Well, yeah, I don't go in the club anymore, and it's a long time since I've gone to the club. But yeah, you know, I think when you hear a song that you did or whatever, I'm like, oh yeah, we shot that video. It'd be a lot cooler back in the day to go somewhere and see the video playing, but that, you know, is rare to see these days. You really don't see.
Right. It used to be like it'd be on like in the background.
I mean, it feels good. I mean, I think like we did this project for Yellow Wolf back in the day, Pop the Trunk, and that kind of went viral in its own way. And then there's later down the road, there's a video of Eminem saying, you know, he's like, yeah, you know, the producer showed me the video, and I was like, you know, I forgot what he said exactly, but he's like, pretty much, I saw this video and I was like, I need to sign this guy, you know? And it's like, you know, so it's cool when people like you're growing up to or you are fans of like even just acknowledge your work or have seen it, you know, or, you know, when they put something out online or have an opinion on it, you know, it's cool that you've even, you know, evoked some sort of emotion out of these people that you look up to, you know? They're like, wow, Eminem saw my video and thought, you know, not just saw it, but like, made an action or was contributed to an action that, you know, he did, you know? So it's cool. And I think just working like, you know, I think we've been lucky and like the bucket list people we worked with early, you know, I was a big fan of Boosie before I worked with him. And, you know, that's probably one of my top bucket list people going into it. And I was like one of the first people. So I think, you know, and people like Jeezy or Big Boy. And so once you do that, it's kind of like, wow, you know, you just try to figure out, you know, where to take it from there. But, you know, I was lucky enough to work with a lot of the people I wanted to and looked up to going into it.
And what, you said you're not doing a lot, like, what are you guys working on these days?
I think we're trying to figure that out. I mean, we're trying to focus more on branded content and commercial work. This year we got a new office and opened up our little store and gallery. So focusing on, you know, that's a passion project. So, you know, continuously staying, doing passion. I mean, music's still a passion. I think we've just a little disconnected from it because, you know, a lot of our favorite projects, we'd spend, you know, not just 12 hours with the artist, but we'd be doing a project for 16 or 18 hours in the day. Or if we didn't feel like we had what we needed, we'd come back and do it. And I don't feel like that's really like an opportunity anymore. Artists want to spend 4 or 5 hours on set, show up late. You know, it's just not, it's hard to find that passion in somebody. So it gets frustrating trying to get a cool concept across when you don't have the time to do it. So less music stuff, art, commercial, and branded content stuff is documentary style stuff, you know, do more of the Boosie type projects. I think ownership, I mean, all the music stuff we do, we don't own. So having more ownership in what we do, I think is important.
It seems like you could do the whole like, hey, let's do a ton of branded content and get paid, and then we can go do more passion projects.
Right. That's kind of the goal. I mean, or just get, you know, you can get a good commercial and be good for a while, you know. So really just, you know, we've done stuff with Checkers and Rallies, which was cool. And, you know, they come to us and let us, you know, they want something that feels like authentic and somewhat natural but looks good, you know. So it's cool when people come to us and recognize what we do and hire us.
Did you shoot Fabo for Crystals?
No, I need to get connected with more food brands. That's a goal of mine. You know, I know KFC is shooting some stuff here tomorrow, and Chick-fil-A does a bunch here. So just getting focused, getting our work together, trying to, you know, it's just that whole hustle. It's almost like starting over again and having to get a whole new set of those kind of networking connections that you've built up in music. That's a, you know, commercial is a whole different world. So doing that, and so just getting, you know, it's hard. It's not an easy process with to have that drive. So, you know, just getting the materials we need, and part of that's building, you know, having the commercial portfolio to show. So just getting to where we need to be, and hopefully get more commercial work and branded content stuff, which will allow us to also pursue our passions of art or documentary or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah, I feel like marketing folks always want, like, hey, we don't want it to look like marketing shit. We want it to be legit. Like, you guys seem like a good choice to go to for that.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of our style. Just want it to feel authentic and natural, and or, you know, if we're going something crazy creative. But yeah, our style is really just, you know, and authentic. You know, that's what a lot of people say, and that's what we like, and that's, you know, what we kind of lean towards a lot of the time.
All right, this is the Atlanta favorites quiz. There are no wrong answers. All right, what is your go-to order at the Waffle House?
Bacon, egg, and cheese sandwich with hash browns. What do you call well done with cheese, smothered and covered?
Okay. What is your current favorite restaurant in Atlanta?
Newer one, Talat Market.
Where's that?
In Summerhill. In the Thai street style food. If you've ever been to Night Market in LA, it's like the same vibe as that. Right. Really cool. Good food.
Publix or Kroger?
I switch all the time. So I live in Summerhill, and I can go right to go to Kroger, and I can go left to go to Publix, and it just depends how I feel. I grew up loyal to Kroger, though.
Why is that?
My mom. But outside of that, no, it's random.
Complete this sentence. I take MARTA blank.
Nowhere.
Very common answer.
I grew up riding MARTA before I could drive. I went to, I rode it all the time, and I've gotten robbed on MARTA. I've gotten, you know, I used to watch the graffiti on MARTA. Like, I spent a lot of time on MARTA as a kid. I used to take the bus as a kid everywhere, but now I use MARTA very little.
Rank these in importance to you. Falcons, Braves, Hawks, United.
I'm not into sports. Braves, Falcons, Hawks, Atlanta United.
All right, well, those are pretty quickly for a guy who's not into any of those.
I grew up into the Braves. They broke my heart for my whole life.
Right.
You know, as a kid, you're going to the World Series and all these national championships just to lose. It was heartbreaking.
Yeah, I remember those years. This might be a tough one for you. What is the best show you've ever seen in Atlanta, the best concert you've ever been to in Atlanta?
Oh, the Up in Smoke tour in 2001. That was just like an epic show for me to go to. I didn't show up at work. I lost my job. Just epic show though. Like,
where was it?
Lakewood Amphitheater or whatever it's called now. But it was at it was at Lakewood. Just, you know, every Eminem, Dr. Dre, Exhibit. Just every legendary West Coast person and Eminem. It was, you know. Just
what was your day job at the time?
I was working at Noche. It was a restaurant in Virginia Highlands. I was a food carrier and busboy.
A food carrier.
Yeah, that's what they had me doing, carrying food.
Which television, which character from the television show Atlanta is your favorite?
I hate to admit this, but I don't watch TV.
No, it's okay. A lot of people don't. Atlanta's a really good show, though. Not just because I live here, it's a really good show regardless.
And I know people that wrote on it too. I just like, my attention span is I just got to really get into it or whatnot. But I unless I have a significant other that's really into TV, then I don't find myself watching it.
So when you're chilling by yourself, what are you doing? When you're home at the end of the day, what are you doing?
I spend a lot of time at work. I'm on my computer. You know, I'll stay at work now till like 8 or 9 p.m. I go to bed early, 10. So, like, I'll come home. Sometimes I'll make dinner. Take my dog for a long walk. Try to, you know, I moved into a house recently about a year ago, and I still need to do a lot with that. Like, put stuff on the walls and just, you know, so I try to do something around the house, and I go to bed pretty early. So,
okay.
I don't have a problem falling asleep really. So, I don't have to watch anything to fall asleep. I'll just kind of pass out. So
right.
I rarely find myself watching TV. I mean, during COVID, I was like trying to get into TV shows and documentaries and watching stuff wherever. But I feel like the last TV show like I really watched all the way through was, God, what's the name of it? The meth one. It's been a while. It's years.
The meth one?
The meth one where that guy was like, fuck. The meth show. The show about meth. The guy, the chemistry teacher that quit to cook.
Oh, Breaking Bad.
Yeah. That was like the last like real like series I really watched all the way through.
Did you make it all the way to the end?
Yeah, yeah. I love that one.
Okay.
That
was great. Well, I know you don't watch a lot of TV, but Better Call Saul just ended. Better Call Saul is the prequel.
I know.
And it's really good.
I should like... If COVID ever happens again, I will.
Please
watch
don't
that.
Say that. Please don't say if COVID ever happens again.
But it's just, you know, it's hard for me to just like, you know, I don't know. I just movies too. Like I fall asleep if I go to a movie.
Yeah. Well, I watch TV with my wife at night. It's kind of how we wind down. But after she goes to bed, I'll put something on. But as a creative person, it actually does sometimes then just get me thinking about like if I watch a documentary. Like, oh, like I want to do something like that. Or maybe, you know what I mean? Or I like how they shot that. Or you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's kind of hard sometimes.
And I did, like, you know, I haven't always necessarily been this way. I like current events. So, you know, when I would watch TV, I watch news stuff. But I've just kind of gotten, you know, I've kind of gone away from that because everything's just been so, like, wild with everything. So, you know, I'm less up with current events now and don't watch as much news. But... That was, you know, like when I would watch stuff, I grew up with my dad watching the news, but I like
2, 5, or 11.
What do you mean? Oh, what? channel two
was Monica Kaufman.
WSB TV.
Yeah. 5 was, I can't remember who, but
yeah. WSB TV, Monica Kaufman. So I grew up.
Stop banging.
I grew up watching. I wonder if it's like coming through the AC. I wonder if it's like the AC something.
Oh, Lady Bird is behind us. So the whole time, the reason I was messed up because I was thinking we were at
the other spot.
No, I was thinking, no, I know the other spot too, but just in my mind, it doesn't matter. Anyway, now it makes sense. Lady Bird is in fact behind us.
They're doing construction, but it's coming out of the damn AC unit.
Do you go to Muchacho much? Same owner?
I have been.
I love Muchacho.
I haven't been a ton, but I have been to Muchacho.
Pre-pandemic, that was my spot. I didn't even have an office, so I could do interviews there. Just like, hey, let's roll up and talk. Plus, great breakfast burritos, good coffee.
Yeah. Big,
little plug for Muchacho.
I like that little... I used to like that place they had in before they made Muchacho take over the whole thing, too. What was that restaurant they had?
I don't remember. Oh.
Cool, too.
Something.
It didn't last, but I liked it, too. But yeah, I mean, I like, you know, shit. That's our go-to little place, Lady Bird, over here, because it's right next to our office, so...
Right. What? Tell people what you want. What do you hope to happen with the museum and everything?
I think our goal with the store and Atlanta Worldwide is to just get our friends' art out there. I think that was one of the goals of it. We called it Atlanta Worldwide because we're on the Beltline, and we just wanted to introduce our version of what we liked in culture of Atlanta to people who might not know. Of our friends like Dax and Chilio and Sever and Manny and Aaliyah and, you know, just a ton of people, Sean, and, you know, just trying to support. We have a ton of talented friends, a lot of dope artists and an outlet now. And also we like to collect